This is edition number 2012 of The Mardler, recorded in Aylsham on Friday, the 10th of April, 2026. Hello, you are listening to The Mardler, the weekly talking newspaper for North Norfolk. Today, we bring you the week's news and views from the North Norfolk News of Thursday, the 9th of April, 2026. My name is Adrian Allenby, and my fellow readers are
Mary Wilson,
Jill Mellows, and Claire Hill.
On the notice board today, this week the sun will rise around 6 o'clock and will set at about 10 minutes to 8.
The magazine supplement will follow a little later in the programme and includes how the Norfolk Wildlife Trust was formed, the private lives of octopuses, the village that time forgot, and Donald Trump's library.
But to begin with, the main news item, which include a new NHS dentist for Cromer, anger at parkrun charges, sewage success, and a major milestone for a Norfolk wind farm. Let's start with those lead stories.
A new NHS dental practice has been given the final green light to open on the Norfolk coast. North Norfolk District Council has approved the plans to convert the former tourism hub in Cromer's Meadow Road car park into the new practice. It is expected to employ 14 people, including 6 dentists who intend to provide both NHS and private services. The change comes after the council-owned tourist centre closed last year as part of a raft of cost-saving measures. It was then advertised on the open market as a lease opportunity for businesses. 8 businesses came forward expressing interest in taking on the site, with other options including a bakery, cafe, osteopath, and a real ale pub. But council officials deemed an offer from a dental firm to be the best move financially and agreed the lease last May. Dental Design Studio submitted the plans at the beginning of the year. The main dental consulting and technical areas are set to be housed within the rotunda, with 3 consulting rooms and an X-ray room on the ground floor. 2 further consulting rooms and a decontamination and preparation room are due to be on the new first floor formed within the rotunda. A planning statement said, "It will bring much needed service to Cromer and retain the character of a landmark building. Over recent years, there have been serious concerns about the access to dental treatment across the region, and particularly access to NHS services. One study in 2024 found that of the 53 practices consulted in a survey, none were accepting new NHS patients, and some had waiting lists in the thousands, leaving people feeling devastated and offloaded. Planning officers agreed that there would be a public benefit from the provision of a much in-demand health service and approved the plans.
Angry park runners have voiced their frustration over facing new parking charges at a popular National Trust site in North Norfolk. Sheringham Park Run, which is held at Sheringham Park, has announced that all runners and supporters of the free event will now have to pay £6.50 for parking at the site. National Trust, which own the park, has claimed that the charges will go towards maintaining the site and ensure fairness for all park users. But the new fee has sparked controversy in the community, with one calling it outrageous on social media. Another called for the National Trust to reconsider and said £6.50 for 2 hours even exceeds that charged by North Norfolk District Council in their coastal car parks and will likely make this no longer an option for those who can't afford it. Members of the Trust will be able to park for free, and the Park Run team has called for runners to become a member to save money in the longer term. In a post, it notes that those under the age of 26 can pay £4.20 a month, while it is £8.40 a month for those over the age of 26. This allows members unlimited annual access to most National Trust car parks, gardens and houses without additional cost. It follows similar costs at the Blickling Estate Park Run, where it is £5 to park. One runner claimed that they had moved from Blickling Park Run to Sheringham due to the parking charges. He said, "For me, one of the attractions of Park Run is that it's a free event, so joining the NT means that it isn't free." A spokeswoman for National Trust said, "Proceeds from the new charges will go directly towards maintaining this special place and ensure fairness for all park users. Having consulted with the run organisers, we feel that this new measure is broadly supported by the majority of runners and visitors and will bring Sheringham Park into line with other National Trust places that host a park run. The charges will come into effect from May the 2nd and only coins will be accepted."
Spills in worst hit sewage hotspots in North Norfolk have dropped by 95%, it has emerged. New data has revealed that sewage spills in West Runton and Knackers Wood in the heart of the Broads dramatically dropped in 2025. In West Runton, the number of hours of spillages dropped by 94%, from 116 in 2024 to just 7 in 2025. And at Knackers Wood, where the sewage works empty into the River Ant between Howe Hill and Ludham Bridge, the spillage hours dropped by 95%, from 4,359 in 2024 to 204 in 2025. Releases come from storm overflows, which dump untreated sewage into rivers and the sea, usually during periods of heavy rainfall, to stop sewers from backing up and flooding. The result follows a £1.2 million investment secured for West Runton and a £2.3 million investment for the area at Knackers Wood. It comes as Anglian Water announced that the storm overflow performance in 2025 was the best ever, with the total duration of all spills reduced by more than 80% compared to 2024. While it does admit that the dry weather has helped the performance, it said this is not the main reason. The water firm has removed 340 storm overflows from its network entirely and set out improvement plans for each of the company's 1,442 storm overflows to significantly reduce discharges. As part of its 2020 to 2025 business plan, Anglian Water invested almost £100 million to construct and upgrade 112 storm tanks across the region. This has helped to reduce storm overflows from water recycling centres by creating storage to hold excess flows during heavy rain, reducing the need for storm overflows to be used as emergency release valves to prevent flooding. Mark Thurston, Chief Executive for Anglian Water, said, "We know our customers and communities feel strongly that storm overflow discharges are unacceptable, and we agree. Storm overflows have been part of the sewer system for decades, and they were originally designed to protect homes and businesses from internal sewer flooding during heavy rainfall, something they still do today. Our long-term goal is to completely stop using storm overflows, but getting there isn't something we can do overnight. This year, Anglian Water is set to invest £47 million to build 35 new storm tanks across the region to increase storage capacity.
The first of two converter stations for the world's largest offshore wind farm has been installed on the seabed off the Norfolk coast. Once complete, Ørsted's Hornsea 3 wind farm will power more than 3 million UK homes. Made up of the jacket, which is piled into the seabed, and the topside, which sits above the offshore converter station, will help transform power from the wind farm's turbines before it is sent to the UK via cable. The converter station towers 70 metres above sea level, taller than the Leaning Tower of Pisa. It was built in Map Tar Phut, Thailand, before sailing more than 13,000 nautical miles to Haugesund, Norway, for the installation and commissioning of high-voltage equipment. Lou Bridgman, Managing Director of Ørsted's Hornsea 3, said, "The installation of this offshore converter station is a major milestone for Hornsea 3 and a great example of what detailed planning, strong collaboration and disciplined execution can achieve. It reflects the technical expertise of our team and contract partners and a clear, unwavering focus on safety at every stage." 2026 has got off to a great start for Hornsea 3. The first cable for Hornsea 3, weighing 50 kilograms per metre, was pulled ashore at the Norfolk village of Weybourne last week. Once reaching landfall, the cable will be buried underground on a 30-mile, 50-kilometre route through the countryside, arriving at an onshore converter station in Swordston on the outskirts of Norwich. Throughout 2026, more than 420 miles, 680 kilometres, of export cable will be laid, allowing energy generated by the wind farm to reach over 3.3 million UK homes. The fabrication of the Hornsea export cables began 3 years ago and will be completed this summer. The wind farm is located around 70 miles, 120 kilometres, off the coast of Norfolk.
A major DIY chain, with several stores in Norfolk, has announced it is closing a string of locations. Topps Tiles has said it will shut the doors to 23 of its shops. The Leicestershire-based firm said the closures, 7% of its 319-strong estate, will help slash costs as part of a significant self-help measures. Bosses said the stores are underperforming, with 8 already closed since last September, and the remainder set to shut over the next 6 months. Topps Tiles currently runs in Norwich's Mile Cross, Norwich's Hall Road, Great Yarmouth, Cromer, Thetford and King's Lynn. Earlier this year, the retailer confirmed it would close its Great Yarmouth store this May. It is not yet clear if any of the other Norfolk premises will be impacted. Topps Tiles Chief Executive Alex Jensen said, "In light of subdued consumer sentiment and geopolitical uncertainty, as well as the cumulative impact of cost inflation, the management team is implementing a targeted program of self-help measures weighted towards the second half. These actions are designed to support year-on-year profit growth and provide a stronger financial platform for 2027 and beyond."
Thousands of families across Norfolk are in line for an increase in child benefit. HM Revenue and Customs, HMRC, has said more than 6.9 million families claiming child benefit will be entitled to more from April the 6th. They can get £27.05 per week or £1,406.60 a year for the eldest or only child, and £17.90 per week or £930.80 a year for each additional child. There is no limit on how many children parents can claim for. The change works out as an annual increase of £52 and £33.80 respectively. Child benefit is usually paid every 4 weeks. Latest government figures show that only 72% of families claim it in their baby's first year. The easiest way to make a claim is via the HMRC app. Myrtle Lloyd, HMRC's Chief Customer Officer, said, "Looking after a child can be expensive, and especially a newborn baby. It takes a few minutes to claim child benefit via the app, and doing so as soon as you can after your baby is born will ensure you don't miss out on vital financial support."
An overnight road closure is planned for Reefham later this month, with motorists warned of disruption. Station Road will shut from its junction with Kurdistan Road to its junction with Marketplace. This is to undergo duct laying, with the works carried out by BT and a temporary traffic order in the area. The closure will be in effect from April the 15th to the 18th, between 7 p.m. and 6 a.m. A spokesman for Norfolk County Council said, "The order shall automatically revoke on the completion of the works when the closure is no longer necessary, or otherwise on the 30th of May 2026, without further notice. If necessary, the restriction could run for a maximum period of 18 months from the date the order is effective. A diversion route will take motorists via Station Road, Causton Road, High Street, Aylsham Road, B1149 Holt Road, Norwich Road and Link Road roundabout. It will then direct people through Briston Road, Dereham Road, Fakenham Road, Reefham Road and Bordswell Road. The route will add around 44 minutes and 28 miles onto journeys."
An episode of a hit BBC television show that was filmed in Norfolk will air this month, it has been revealed. Escape to the Country will return to screens across the UK at 3 p.m. on April the 14th, with houses around the Norfolk and Suffolk countryside featuring. The BBC One episode synopsis explains that presenter Alistair Appleton helps a couple who have never lived in an older home, but who are now ready to fall for a bit of period charm in either Norfolk or Suffolk. With a £270,000 budget and three lively whippets to please, they are after a dog-friendly garden and a slice of East Anglian architectural history to call home. Alistair also meets a willow farmer and discovers how this wonderfully sustainable crop is being woven into the future. The last episode, featuring the eastern counties, aired in October, when presenter Steve Brown helped South London couple Natasha and Lindsay find a new home. The pair viewed homes in Diss and Long Stratton and enjoyed a pint at the Locks Inn in Geldeston.
Our next few news stories include a Broads Bridge boost, success for NHS campaigners, tributes to a Norfolk theatre great and a national prize for a local hospitality company.
They have been a declining feature of the Broads for decades, but the bridge pilot services at Wroxham and Potter Heigham are to continue for another year. The Broads Authority has announced the facilities will be available at both bridges to allow an experienced helm to navigate boats safely beneath the low, narrow crossings for owners and holidaymakers. Norfolk Broads Direct will provide the services at Wroxham Bridge after it cancelled it for Harcraft last year. Phoenix Fleet will be operating the service for the Potter Heigham Bridge. The number of boats navigating beneath both bridges has dropped significantly in the past 30 years, a consequence both of newer boats being too large to squeeze beneath the crossings and rising river levels making it harder even for smaller boats to do so. Pilot Services once took about 13,000 boats a year through Potter Heigham's medieval bridge on the River Thurne. But last year, just one vessel was guided through, and in 2024 there were none. When the figures were revealed in September, Sue Cademy, who operates a hire boat firm based in Hoverton, said that 99% of boats cannot get through it anymore. The landmark, built in the 14th century, is a notorious navigational hazard and has about 6 feet of headroom to pass through, although this varies depending on water levels. In recent years, high water levels have made it nearly impossible to fit under, except for the very smallest craft, resulting in fewer boats visiting the Upper Thurne area. The crossing is a frequent focus of videos showing failed attempts to pass through, and all hire boats are required to use a pilot if they wish to go under. Private boat users can also use the services of a pilot. A spokesman for the BA said, "It is great to see a collaborative approach in place to allow visitors to the Broads to continue access to these special parts of the waterways." Phoenix Fleet will offer its services depending on the tidal level for a charge of £10 return for day launches and £15 for yachts and cabin cruisers. Norfolk Broads Direct will offer the same at Wroxham Bridge for a return charge of £15 between 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. 7 days a week until the end of October.
A campaign to reopen a mothballed NHS facility in North Norfolk has taken a major step forward. Locals have been battling to reopen Benjamin Court in Cromer for nearly 3 years, after it was shut without public consultation in June 2023. The site had provided short-term care beds for patients well enough to leave hospital, but not ready to return home. Campaigners had described it as a vital service. But now they are feeling more hopeful for the future of the site after lobbying the Norfolk and Waveney Integrated Care Board, ICB, at County Hall in Norwich. Officials from the ICB agreed that they would now engage with the group to discuss the future of Benjamin Court as part of wider discussions about locally based care in North Norfolk. At the meeting, Martin Booth, who spearheaded the campaign, said, "We would ask that in any review of neighbourhood health services in North Norfolk that you urgently look again at Benjamin Court and reopen it as an NHS hub to ease the crisis in hospital discharges and provide a vital health facility for the people of North Norfolk." A spokesman for the ICB at the County Hall meeting said, "With the particular focus on preventing frailty and supporting those who are frail, I think there is a lot more we can do. We are also very supportive of the ambition to shift care out of acute hospitals and into the community to create a new neighbourhood service. We are listening as an ICB and we do want to work with you." Following the meeting, Mr. Booth added, "We consider it to be a significant step forward for our campaign. It is a tribute to all of you who have stuck by us over the last 3 years and reflects the overwhelming view of the North Norfolk community that Benjamin Court urgently needs to be reopened."
Tributes have been paid to an actor who has been described as a towering icon of British theatre. Desmond Barrett, an Olivier Award-winning actor who championed theatres across Norfolk, has died aged 81. From his role as Panto Dame at Norwich Theatre Royal to starring in the West End and TV shows such as It's a Sin, he is known for his spectacular performances across the stage and screen. And as a director of pantomimes at the Pavilion Theatre in Galston and Sheringham Little Theatre, he has also been remembered for his passion and support for local theatres. Alex Youngs, chief executive of the Galston Pavilion Trust, said, "Des was a towering icon of British theatre and absolutely loved his role in supporting small theatres. The team were always humbled by his generosity and his grounded, down-to-earth nature. He was an absolutely formidable presence, and we were privileged to have known him." Debbie Thompson, Sheringham Little Theatre director, added, "We were very honoured to have the support of such an acclaimed actor as Des. We will miss him." The Norwich Theatre Royal also issued a statement following the news, which said, "We are deeply saddened to hear of the passing of Desmond Barrett, a major figure in Norwich theatre history. Des was part of a gala opening season for the newly refurbished Theatre Royal and the creative force behind our pantos from 1996 to 2002 as a writer, director and iconic dame. He will be sorely missed, and our thoughts go out to his family and friends at this time." The Welsh-born actor also played numerous roles on screen, including opposite Patrick Stewart in a TV adaptation of A Christmas Carol and in It's a Sin on Channel 4 in 2021. Paying tribute on social media, its writer Russell T. Davies described Mr. Barrett as a lion, a giant and a joy, and said, "He'll be much missed. Good night to a great man." Sheringham Little Theatre has said Mr. Barrett died unexpectedly at home in Islington, North London, on March the 21st, where he lived with his partner, Byron.
A hospitality company that runs numerous pubs and hotels around Norfolk has been named among the nation's best at a major awards ceremony. The Chestnut Group has taken home the prize of Best Accommodation Operator at the Publican Awards 2026. Once a pub-led company, Chestnut now also manages more than 400 rooms with an average occupancy rate of 70%. The company was recognised for its success in transforming overnight stays into a core part of its business. "This award is a reflection of how important accommodation has become to our business," Philip Turner, founder and CEO at Chestnut, said. "It allows us to welcome guests for longer, to create more meaningful experiences, and to build a more resilient model. What matters most, though, is how it's delivered, with care, consistency, and a genuine sense of place. That comes from our teams." Genevieve Dorrington, Guest Experience Manager at Chestnut, puts the award win down to the dedication of staff across the business. "Every room is prepared, checked, and cared for by people who take real pride in what they do," she said. "Guests might not always see that work, but they feel it in how comfortable, easy, and considered their stay is. That's what keeps people coming back." Nearly half of Chestnut's guests travel from other parts of the UK. The group operates some of the most popular pubs in North Norfolk, including the Wifton Bell, the White Horse in Blakeney, the Lifeboat Inn and the Checkers in Thornham, the Globe Inn in Wells, the Gin Trap Inn in Ringstead, the Ancient Mariner Inn in Hunstanton and the Feathers in Holt. It also runs three hotels in the region, including the award-winning Maltings in Weybourne, Titchwell Manor and Lestrange Arms in Old Hunstanton. Lestrange Arms will undergo a major refurbishment later this year as part of a big investment into the property.
Grants totalling more than £53,000 have been awarded to support urgent repairs across historic church buildings. The Norfolk Churches Trust has distributed £53,586 to 14 churches in Norfolk to help fund essential repair and conservation work. This comes after the government ended the Listed Places of Worship grant scheme, which allowed churches to reclaim VAT on eligible repair work. The scheme was expected to run until March 2026, but ran out of its £23 million allocation by February, leaving many churches facing unrecoverable VAT costs on projects already planned or underway. This has forced the Trust to support additional VAT costs. Stephanie Fairman, Church Warden at All Saints Church in Runhall, said, "We are incredibly grateful to the Norfolk Churches Trust. Thanks to their support, we are now able to proceed with the project, which is wonderful news." Other churches to receive grants include St Andrew's in Attlebridge, St Peter's in Billingford, All Saints in Boughton, St John the Evangelist in Oxborough, and Wyndham Baptist Church. Many hope for clearer guidance soon on the government's replacement scheme.
An award-winning adventure park in Norfolk has been named as one of the best family days out in the country. Bewilderwood, near Hoverton, has been recognised by The Times for its magical appeal and range of activities. The park is inspired by a series of fantasy books by author Tom Blofeld and first opened in 2007. It is known for characters such as Swampy the Marsh Boggle and Snagglefang the Bewilder Bat, who perform on the storytelling stage and appear at meet and greets. As highlighted by writers at the publication, children can enjoy climbing, sliding, and flying through the trees on a zip wire. Families can also enjoy creating dens and getting stuck in crafting at the Big Hat. One of its most well-known residents is Mildred the Crocklebog, who greets people with a splash of water on the boat ride. The price for children's tickets ranges from £12.50 to £24, depending on the time of year and the height of the child. Last year, the park won silver in the Best Small Theme Parks for Toddlers category at the UK Theme Park Awards 2025.
A lifeboat crew is celebrating a successful month after three volunteers completed their training. The volunteers from Haysborough RNLI passed assessments for Tier 2 crew, shore crew and head launcher. John Church, who qualified as both Tier 2 and shore crew, said, "I would like to thank the whole team for all their help. I'm pleased to have completed the training and be able to help in many ways." Dan Back, who also qualified as shore crew, said, "It's a good start on my return to the station after a long time out of the area and great to be back with the team. I'm looking forward to continuing my training in becoming the maintainer." Mike Fox, who passed out as head launcher, said, "I just want to say a big thank you to the whole team for the support and training, particularly from the head launchers, over the last few months." On March the 29th, the station welcomed more than 200 visitors during a public open day. Guests enjoyed a barbecue, games, and a chance to tour the station and meet the crew. RNLI lifeguards were also giving advice on their 25th year anniversary of their formation. The event raised more than £600 to support the RNLI's work. A spokesman said, "A big thank you to all for your support and turning out on the day.
The reopening date of a North Norfolk pub that closed last summer has still not been confirmed. The White Horse pub in Cromer closed in July, and Stonegate, which owns the venue, revealed it would be reopening in February of this year. A spokeswoman for the company said in January that the pub in West Street will be welcoming back customers in the next week or two, following refurbishment works by the tenants. However, there was no sign of the pub reopening, with locals reporting that the windows had been boarded up last month. When questioned about the reopening, a spokeswoman for Stonegate said, "We are currently recruiting for a new publican and hope to get the pub open to the public again soon." Previous tenants include the owners of the nearby Masala Twist restaurant, Jay and Ali Kelly, who took on the pub in February 2024, but left at the end of the same year. Annie Kemp was landlady of the pub for 18 years, who said she had no choice but to leave it behind due to the rent increase by Stonegate. You are listening to edition number 2012 of The Mardler, recorded on Friday, the 10th of April, 2026. Still to come, there are items about Omaze house planning row, a Norfolk attraction opens for the 50th year, and of course, the Mardler magazine supplement. But before all of that, this week's obituaries.
Melva Jean Elizabeth Clark died peacefully at home in Saltice, March 26, 2026, aged 90. Beloved widow of Michael Latham Clark, mother to Louise and Carey, grandmother to Lindsay and Douglas. Funeral at 1:30 p.m. on April 27 at St. Nicholas Church, Saltice.
Melvin Moy, aged 70 years, at his home in Gresham on March 17, 2026, son of the late Henry and Elsie, cousin of Tony and Roger Bumfrey. He will be missed by his good friend of many years, Geoffrey. Now at peace. Funeral service at St. Faith's Crematorium at 2 p.m. on Wednesday, April 15th, 2026. All inquiries to Blythe and Sons Funeral Directors, telephone 01263 823 155.
And now, some local events. Thursday, the 16th of April, Mini Museum Club. Shops at 10:30 a.m. free. Once a month, under fives and their families are invited to explore Lynn Museum with a variety of activities. Lynn Museum, Market Street, King's Lynn. Lynn.museum at norfolk.gov.uk. 01553 775001. Thursday, the 16th of April, The Power of Photography in World War II at 2 p.m. £3. A talk by Mark Glaister on the power of photography during the war. North Walsham Library, New Road, North Walsham. Northwalsham.lib at libraries.norfolk.gov.uk 01692 402 482.
We turn now to this week's Mardler magazine supplement, where we discover the origins of the Norfolk Wildlife Trust. Find out how baby octopuses are made, travel back to a forgotten railway village, and hear about plans for a billion-dollar library.
Nick Aitchison celebrates 100 years of the Norfolk Wildlife Trust and its founder, Dr. Sidney Long. This appeared in the Norfolk Magazine on February 2026. On March 6, 1926, Dr. Sidney Long had a plan. Little though he knew it, it was a plan that would change forever the trajectory of nature conservation. Sidney Long was a physician at the Jenny Lind and Norfolk and Norwich hospitals. His passion, however, was for the natural world. He served for decades as an officer of the Norfolk and Norwich Naturalist Society, and in 1912 he had been instrumental in the purchase of Blakeney Point, which he and his fellow contributors had gifted to the fledgling National Trust. In March 1926, when 400 acres of grazing marsh at Clye came up for sale, Sidney Long had a new idea. He persuaded 11 friends to join him in buying the marsh, and the next week, at a meeting in the George Hotel in Clye, he proposed that they create a trust to preserve the marsh as a bird breeding sanctuary for all time. This trust, which came into legal being on November 5, 1926, was Norfolk Naturalist Trust, which has been known since 1994 as Norfolk Wildlife Trust. Sidney Long's trust grew quickly. When one considers, he wrote in the Eastern Daily Press, the changes in the face of the county that are being made or are being contemplated by forestry commissioners, drainage boards, speculative builders, and the like, one is anxious to preserve for future generations areas of marsh, heath, woods, and undrained fenland for their natural wealth of flora and fauna. To this end, in 1928, a second reserve was purchased, 26 acres, at Starch Graths, Martham, and on July 12, 1930, Alder Fen Broad was added to the Trust's growing portfolio of reserves. In 1939, a wheat ear was chosen as the subject of NNT's Christmas card, painted by celebrated artist J.C. Harrison. It was dedicated to Sidney Long, who had died in January. Dr. S.H. Long, the founder of the Trust and its honorary secretary for 12 years. No one looked forward more eagerly than he to the arrival of the wheat ear in early spring of each year, and he was usually the first to record its appearance in Norfolk. The Trust has recently entered into arrangements to acquire an area of brickland where this bird nests, in order to preserve the land as a sanctuary, and on this site it is proposed to erect a stone in memory of Dr. Lone. That land was East Wrentham Heath, where Sidney Long's memorial stands to this day. Sidney Long and his fellow founders would be richly proud of Norfolk Wildlife Trust in our centenary year. We have grown, to be sure, since their daring decision to buy Clye Marshes, and create a trust to care for it. Indeed, we now manage 12,600 acres of land in Norfolk for wildlife, people, and the environment. We have grown in scope too, but always in line with the vision of Sidney Long. The objects for which the trust is established, he wrote in 1926, are purposely made very wide and comprehensive. When Sidney Long conceived Norfolk Naturalist Trust in 1926, it was a revolutionary idea, for no such organisation existed, dedicated to local nature conservation through managing and protecting habitats. While each subsequent wildlife trust has its own identity, its own skilled staff, its network of reserves, its own unique achievements, they all exist because of Sidney Long and his bold vision a century ago this month.
New research has shed an intriguing light on the sex lives of the octopus. The Times science editor, Rhys Blakely, reveals all. From Times, April 2nd, 2026. You already knew that octopuses were bizarre creatures, masters of disguise, formidable escape artists, and possessors of what amount to several mini-brains distributed among their eight arms. But wait until you hear about their sex lives. According to a new study from Harvard University, the male octopus courts not with a glance, but with a probing arm that can quite literally taste a potential partner. The same appendage is then used to transfer an envelope of sperm. This specialised limb, known as the hectocotylus, has long been recognised as a reproductive tool. Until now, however, researchers had not appreciated that it is also a sensory organ in its own right, capable of identifying a suitable mate in the dark by her chemical signature. In plain terms, a male will reach out, feel around, and detect the female's hormones to confirm he has found the right partner. He then uses his hectocotylus to deliver a parcel of sperm, known as a spermatophore, into her mantle cavity, the bulbous part of the octopus that lies behind the eyes. Inside, the hectocotylus guides the spermatophore to the female's oviduct, where fertilisation can take place. The male can do this without ever seeing the female. A blind date, by any definition. The new study began when Pablo Villar, a researcher at Harvard University, was intrigued to find that the hectocotylus was dotted with sensors similar to those seen on the other arms. That was surprising because the males generally don't use the hectocotylus for exploring or finding food, he said. They keep it close to their body, coiled up, and don't really use it for sampling the sea floor. Villar and his colleagues carried out experiments to explore what the sensors were used for. In one, male and female octopuses were separated by an opaque barrier with small openings, meaning they could not see each other. The male extended his specialised arm through the gap, located the female, and proceeded with mating. When paired with another male, however, the behaviour stopped. Something more exactly, some special set of molecules, was missing. The key substance turned out to be progesterone, a hormone known in humans for its role in pregnancy. Female octopuses produce it in their reproductive organs. The male's hectocotylus, the researchers discovered, is exquisitely tuned to detect it. Their method of mating may reflect the animal's lifestyles. Octopuses are solitary creatures that rarely encounter one another in the wild, which means there is no room for error when trysts do occur. By merging sensing and mating into a single appendage, the chance of mistaken identities and wasted effort is reduced.
Local author Caroline McGee travels back to early 20th century North Norfolk to share the inspiration behind her debut novel, The Sitter. This article is from the North Norfolk Living, November 2025. When I first drove through Melton Constable, I realised I was somewhere very unusual. The houses weren't made of picturesque Norfolk flint, front doors facing away from the wind blowing off the North Sea. I was instead surrounded by tiny, industrial brick terraces. Vast railway buildings lurked down back lanes, entirely derelict. It seemed to have been built in the middle of nowhere. An entire community, I would soon discover, had been created to serve an enormous railway hub called the Works. It was a forgotten railway village, and I was completely drawn in by it. I stopped the car and looked at the houses, overgrown allotments, boarded up Victorian railway workshops, and was astonished to find a brightly painted church made of corrugated iron that I later learned was known as the Tin Church of Burr Parva. As I drove away, I realised the distant hedge boundary marked what had once been a railway. All writers need a stroke of luck, and mine was to meet an old lady called Phyllis Youngman, who welcomed me into her house on the edge of Melton Constable. She was confined to her chair, but had appointed herself the fierce keeper of village memory. The works had shut down in the 1930s, and when the railway closures followed in the 50s and 60s, she began to collect photographs, diaries, documents, and even kept old railway carriages plus an entire ticket office in her garden. Over tea and biscuits once a week, she shared her collection with me and wanted the story of the village to be told. One evening, she invited descendants of railway families round to share their memories too. Melton Constable. I renamed it Swanton Stoke, scrolled back to 1900 to 1901, and invented a superintendent, a manager, upholsterers, trimmers, clerks, coal shovellers, engine drivers, a gang of boys, and got the trains running again. The Sitter is filled with the optimism of the new century and foreshadows the enormous social changes about to occur between the classes and sexes. The story follows the life of young baker's boy Jack Stamp, who develops a crush on Rosie, a beautiful newcomer who steps off the train one evening, bringing with her a mysterious past. Through her eyes, the reader sees the village as it was over a century ago. Today, Melton Constable's works is bricked up and the railways have gone, but the houses remain, and Phyllis Youngman, who has since died, would be pleased to know that the community is finally coming together to celebrate its railway heritage. The Friends of Briston and Burr Parva Churches have won a £23,500 grant from Historic England as part of the Everyday Heritage Grant Project to celebrate working class history. "We started lots of groups," says Shannon Howell Fuller, a community engagement manager for the Friends. "A history group, a photography group, a group gathering railway memories from older residents, and an embroidery group producing a work by the artist John Jackson." A history website, funded by Historic England, is already up and running. www.meltonconstablehistory.co.uk. And stories from the past are coming in. Some residents have hung on to old railway lamps, station masters' uniforms, and railway signs, which will be exhibited at a festival in May 2026 to bring together all the work they have been doing. Shannon says there will be talks, guided walks, and a 360-degree animation of the station as it once was. The sitter contrasts what was going on in the world of art and science in London with the lives of hard-working railway men and fishermen in Norfolk. And Rosie brings a whiff of scandal into what was a deeply religious community. She gives Jack a gift of a fly trapped in amber, a symbol for things past which still carry meaning for us today. Jack Stamp treasures it to the end. At last, in this year, which marks the 200th anniversary of the first passenger train, Melton Constable is doing just that.
For our next article, we hear from Richard Morrison, chief culture writer, as he asks, will Trump ever be able to build his $1 billion library? This item was published on the 2nd of April 2026 on the website thetimes.com. You have to say this about Donald Trump. He adds to the gaiety of nations as well as the misery. For instance, I can't remember any architectural announcement inspiring quite as much hilarity around the world as the unveiling of Trump's proposed presidential library in Miami. I put library in quotation marks because Trump himself says he doesn't believe in building libraries or museums, only in dictating what they contain, it seems. But the American convention is that retired presidents create libraries of documents and significant objects for future historians to examine. So Trump has entrusted his son, Eric, with creating a sort of library that truly reflects Daddy's towering intellect, charming personality, and renowned achievements. Poor old Eric. Over the past 6 months, he told The World This Week, I have poured my heart and soul into this project. I don't doubt it. Nepotism can be a cruel taskmaster. But in return, sad to say, the world has mocked his efforts mercilessly. Social media is buzzing with comparisons of the proposed library to the monumental statues of Kim Jong-il and Kim Il-sung in North Korea, to Tutankhamun's tomb, and to the self-glorifying edifices erected by Ceausescu, Franco, and Mussolini, and the like. One poetic soul even offered a spoof of Ozymandias, Shelley's famous depiction of despotic hubris. My name is Donald, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. To what could that be referring? Could it be the Boeing 747 that is apparently to be located in the lobby of this library? That nice little $400 million gift to Trump from the rulers of Qatar. Actually, I wonder if they will want it back to pay for the damage caused by the war Trump started. Or the two massive gold effigies of the man himself, complemented, as estate agents would say, by a gold-plated escalator and giant gold entrance arch. Perhaps those two statues will perpetually revolve so that they always face the sun, like the infamous gold statue of himself erected by Turkmenistan's former president, Saparmurat Niyazov. Or is it the enormous Trump sign shining from the top of this 47-storey tower, so that whenever the good citizens of Miami look upwards, the president's name and legacy will always be there to inspire them? Or the expectation that most of the building will actually be a luxury hotel and penthouse suites? thus symbolising the total lack of distinction in Trump's mind between his presidential responsibilities and his shameless profiteering as a real estate developer. Or, in the same event, the fact that much of the money to develop this project appears to be coming covertly from media companies to settle libel suits issued by Trump. Who knows? Perhaps the BBC will soon have to join them. Whatever. This colossal, tacky ego trip is expected to cost $1 billion. As Dolly Parton remarked in another context, it takes an awful lot of money to look this cheap. Not just cheap in this case, but downright disturbing. An eagle-eyed reporter for the New York Times has noted that in the visualisation of the library, the American flag emblazoned on the building appears to have 56 stars rather than the usual 50. An arithmetical error, or a sign that, by the time he leaves office, Trump expects to have strong-armed Greenland, Canada, Cuba, and a few other nations into joining the United States. The conspiracy theorists are having a field day. One thing's clear. Trump clearly wants his presidential library to be bigger, brasher, and blingier than anything built not just by former American presidents, but any other nation's leader, now or in the past.
And those items conclude this week's magazine supplement. Our thanks go to the authors of these articles for their contributions.
Returning to the news, our penultimate selection of articles include a tech tycoon's AI ambitions, a primary school's international links, and Norfolk's latest Town of Culture bidder.
The winner of Omaze's £6 million Norfolk mansion will be finally given the keys to the property more than a year after she won it. Vicky Curtis Creswell was crowned the winner of the Omaze Million Pound House Draw and became the owner of a New England-style property in Blakeney last year. However, she was unable to take ownership of the house due to an investigation which found the property was in breach of planning rules. But now, with the planning matters finally resolved, Omaze has said the home is ready for handover. The company said, "We are pleased to confirm that all remaining works at the Blakeney property have been completed and the home is ready for handover." Omaze appreciates that the process has taken time given the initial planning-related matters initiated by third parties that have been fully resolved and look forward to completing the handover shortly. Mrs. Curtis Creswell may have hoped to move into the new property quickly after winning what was billed as Omaze's biggest ever prize draw, held to raise money for comic relief. But an anonymous tip-off from a member of the public sparked an investigation into the three-bed home, which was found to have been built differently from the approved plans. North Norfolk District Council found it had a number of elements built without the correct permission, including a swimming pool, extension, four-bay garage, and a tennis court. Omaze, which had purchased the property a year prior, then had to apply for retrospective permission, which was granted in October. A source close to Mrs. Curtis Creswell told the BBC, "She had an extremely stressful time due to the uncertainty and constant questioning for updates from friends, family and strangers." Omaze said she had already received a £250,000 cash prize and has been regularly updated and supported throughout the process. It plans to arrange a walkthrough of the property this month for her before the process is completed.
A North Norfolk museum is reopening its doors to the public for its 50th year. The Thursford Steam Museum near Fakenham will welcome people once again from Sunday, April the 5th. The museum houses the world's largest collection of steam engines and organs, many of which are more than a century old. On a trip to the site, visitors can enjoy live Wurlitzer performances by resident organist Robert Wolfe, vintage fairground rides, an on-site cafe and shops. The complex has been operating since 1976, when CEO John Cushing OBE took over the collection from his late father, George Cushing, who had previously kept and restored the machines. What an amazing achievement of being able to welcome customers through our doors for 50 years, Charlie Cushing, General Manager, said. As something that started as a humble collection from my late grandfather to then being transformed into one of the most loved museums and attractions in the country by my father, it's fantastic to now be taking the reins alongside my brother George on such a milestone year. We can't wait to welcome everyone back through our doors. The museum will be open from Sunday to Wednesday each week until September the 3rd, with Thursday openings during the summer holidays. As part of its 2026 programme, the museum's popular Gala Day will return in July. Last year's event featured more than 300 exhibitors and nearly 2,000 visitors. Backstage tours will also return, offering a behind-the-scenes look at the world-famous Christmas Spectacular or a guided history of steam, complete with a trailer ride from the showman's engine, Victory. Both tours include afternoon tea. The Thursford site now features a £3 million 30,000 square foot adventure play park, inspired by a vintage fairground which opened to the public for the first time last year. The outdoor attraction also has a giant steam engine, Ferris wheel, helter-skelter and carousel. Entry is payable on the day of visit and under 15s go free.
Yet another Norfolk town has thrown its hat in the ring to be named the UK's first Town of Culture for 2028. Wells Next the Sea has entered a bid, joining Fakenham, Thetford, Great Yarmouth, and joint entries from Cromer and Sheringham and the Waveney Valley. The bid is entitled Tides of Change, reflecting how the town's past, present and future are deeply connected. It follows a series of well-attended community meetings with local people, businesses and organisations coming together to develop their ideas, stories and ambitions. Simon Dakin of arts organisation Wells Maltings said, "This is not just one person or one organisation's vision. It's a collaborative and grassroots process. Our town is home to 2,500 people and we've had representatives from all kinds of businesses attend our meetings. You can just see the level of support. The bid is about bringing our lovely and vibrant community together and celebrating the essence of what this town means to us." The bid highlights how Wells has been shaped by the rhythm of the tides, highlighting the historic harbour, fishing heritage and creative community in the town. It looks to build on that and ensure that culture continues to play a central role in the town's future for generations to come. Sue Rainsford, a spokeswoman for the bid, added, "We want the bid to show off the strong cultural heart of Wells, but there's more to it than that. It's about our community creating opportunities for people to take part, to be heard, and to help shape what comes next. We want to make sure people know there is a reason to stay in Wells. Inspired by the success of the UK City of Culture, the new UK Town of Culture competition from the Department of Culture, Media and Sport aims to shine a spotlight on the contributions that towns make to the UK's national story. The winner will get £3 million.
A primary school has strengthened its international ties during a visit to its twin school overseas. Reefram Primary School visited Sakado Azuma Kindergarten in Sakado, Japan, as part of an 18-year partnership that has connected pupils and cultures. The visit saw headteacher Caroline Henry and teacher Amy Whitby travel to Japan to spend time at the kindergarten, located about 25 miles from Tokyo. During their stay, they attended the graduation ceremony and Ms. Henry delivered a speech celebrating a long-standing partnership. Ms. Whitby taught phonics to more than 100 pupils and led several workshops for parents. Ms. Henry said, "It is vital to us that our children have the opportunity to learn about different cultures and traditions, and our link with Japan is fundamental to this. Our children love finding out about our twin school and experiencing Japanese culture, and we embed this learning within our curriculum. Both Amy and I were honoured to spend time experiencing Japanese education, thanks entirely to the generosity of the kindergarten, and we will take what we have learned and share it directly with our children as part of their learning." The two teachers shared photos and updates from the visit with pupils and families back in Reefham. The partnership is designed to offer children from both countries a meaningful insight into each other's way of life. Each year, Reefham Primary marks Japan Week with themed activities. Past visits from the kindergarten have included time with pupils who proudly display Japanese versions of their names. Following the Easter break, the Norfolk School will welcome Shizuka, a teacher from Sakado Azuma Kindergarten, who will work with pupils. Japan Week will also take place later in April. Reefham Primary School is also linked with a school in Malawi. The schools hold an annual Malawi Week to help pupils learn about African culture and traditions.
A tech tycoon who lives at a former RAF base in rural Norfolk has launched his own AI chatbot. William Sachiti, the founder of Academy of Robotics, has been quietly developing Athena AI from an underground nuclear bunker beneath the company's RAF Nitis Head base. He says, unlike platforms such as ChatGPT, Google Gemini, and Microsoft Copilot, Athena does not send data to the cloud, keeping its users' personal and business data private. Instead, Mr. Sachiti says, Athena runs behind the company's walls, using its own machines and processing its own data, so nothing leaves the building. Athena is the intelligence system and brain that powers Academy of Robotics' other inventions, including the UK's first street-legal autonomous vehicles, NHS hospital robots, and RAF defence trials. In 2021, I said publicly that the thing that keeps me up at night is the possibility we create an intelligence that suffers. Mr. Sachiti said, that wasn't a throwaway line, it shaped how we built Athena. Not a tool to be exploited, but as a system designed to remember, to reason, to grow. If you're going to build something that thinks, you have a responsibility to build it properly. We took our time. We did it underground, quietly, and we did it right. And we did it in a way that recognises there is nothing artificial about these systems, be it biological or digital. Intelligence is intelligence, be it differentially sentient. Mr. Sacchetti says Athena is a game changer for businesses, replying to emails in the voice of the user, creating presentations, writing sales pitches, and answering phone calls. Academy of Robotics is now inviting a small number of business owners and tech leaders to its underground laboratory for live demonstrations of Athena.
A National Trust property in North Norfolk has been named among the best in the country. The Telegraph published a list of the 20 best sites across England and Wales. In the list, Felbrick Hall, near Cromer, came in at number 7 in the rankings. Achieving a score of 40 out of 50, the newspaper wrote, "The word everyone uses to describe Felbrick Hall is charming. From its symmetrical Jacobean facade to its walled garden and over 500 acres of woods and parkland. The collections include a cabinet room built for grand tour treasures, exquisite wallpaper, novelties such as a magic lantern, and children's toys, and a library with such treats as a dissertation on whoring and a treatise on how to cure gout." Felbrick scored highly for architecture at 9 out of 10, but was let down by its history, and which scored a 7 out of 10. The property recently completed a large-scale renovation. The 7-month scheme focused on the South Corridor, a 36-metre-long service wing dating back to the 1750s.
A £22,500 funding boost is set to support mental health services. 6 charities and community organisations across Norfolk will benefit from the latest round of grants from the Broadland Meridian Mental Health and Wellbeing Fund, which has distributed more than £250,000 since its launch in 2016. Money for the fund is provided by Broadland Housing, along with several of its contractors and partners. It is administered by Norfolk Community Foundation. Deaf Connections has received £2,500 to support activities aimed at reducing isolation within the deaf community. Home Start Norfolk has also been awarded £2,500 to deliver early support to families in Great Yarmouth with children under 5. Musical Keys has received £5,000 towards the cost of its outreach service, which supports vulnerable people in remote areas. Norfolk Clubhouse has also been awarded £5,000, which will contribute towards the running of its Norwich Hub for individuals with significant mental health challenges. The Bridge for Heroes has received £2,500 for monthly inclusive supported outings and activities for veterans in West Norfolk. Yesu in Sheringham is receiving £5,000 towards the cost of delivering its Connect services, providing help to children, young people and families struggling with isolation and mental health challenges.
The Seaside Town Carnival is hosting its first auction to raise money for this year's event. Wells Carnival, which takes place every year and is run by volunteers, has been hit by rising costs. The auction will support the event, with people encouraged to donate unwanted items. The auction is being held at the Gordon Barrett Hall on May the 25th from 11 a.m.
For our final section of news, we're joined by Jane Bradbury.
Hello, everyone. Our last few articles cover plans for a state-of-the-art care home, marina marketing initiative, mental health charity boost, and RNLI success.
New details have emerged over a new state-of-the-art care home that is set to be built in a Norfolk town. North Walsham is set to see a 66-bed care facility open as part of a major housing development south of Norwich Road. The scheme, which was initially approved by North Norfolk District Council in 2024, includes 343 new homes, the care home, and features such as a community orchard. But now developers have revealed what the care facility may offer and look like in a new design submitted to the council. In the proposal, it shows that the three-storey building will include a cinema room, hairdressers, gardening rooms, tea room, and a library. It will also offer features such as a sky bar on the second floor, as well as a public and private dining areas. In a planning statement, it said, "The care home would be an invaluable part of the new development, adding to the character of the area and providing a fantastic facility for local residents in need of care." It added that it will create 60 new jobs and will alleviate pressure on the NHS, as it would provide 24/7 specialist care, which reduces the chances of accidents or injuries in their own homes. However, a clinical lead nurse of a community nursing team, which provides care at home and in residential care settings, has objected to the proposal. The nurse asked whether the impact on existing services will be taken into account and what discussions will be undertaken with the Integrated Care Board to ensure that additional funding is made available. The plans have been submitted by LNT Care Developments, but it notes that its company, Crystal Care, would open a state-of-the-art care home if it is approved. The council will make a decision in due course.
An initiative aimed to strengthen the ties between a popular marina and a town centre has been launched. The Norfolk Broads will once again be in the spotlight as new marketing scheme Stalham Steps hopes to showcase the best of what the town has to offer to both holidaymakers and day visitors. With vibrant new signage at Richardson's Stalham Marina, which sees more than 30,000 visitors a year, the initiative aims to highlight a range of participating local business to visit a short walk away. Stalham is fortunate to welcome tens of thousands of visitors to Richardson's Marina each year, Greg Munford, Chief Executive at Richardson's, said. Stalham Steps is about strengthening the link between the marina and our high street, making it clear how close, walkable and welcoming our town centre is. We're delighted that the installation is complete and that a wide range of local businesses and community groups are represented. This is a strong example of partnership working to support the local visitor economy. Each participating business has its own weather-resistant promotional panel, complete with branding, tailored messaging, and a dedicated QR code linking directly to its website or social media page. Together, the display acts as a visual marketplace of Stalham's diverse offer, from retail and hospitality to services and community groups, encouraging visitors to explore further and support local independent traders. the outdoor promotion is supported by a digital marketing campaign across Richardson's Boating Holidays online platforms. The initiative was part funded by the UK government through the Shared Prosperity Fund and supported by North Norfolk District Council, delivered in partnership with Norfolk County Council. Additional funding support from Richardson's Boating Holidays ensured there was no cost to participating businesses.
Norfolk has been named one of the UK's best family staycation spots. Nelson's County was placed third in the ranking by experts at Outdoor Toys, who compared destinations on factors such as their population, green spaces, outdoor amenities, child-friendly restaurants and campsites. Norfolk earned an overall score of 7.3 out of 10, with 15 outdoor amenities per 10,000 people among the deciding factors. A total of 49% of Norfolk's restaurants were found to be child-friendly, and there are 1.16 campsites per 10,000 people. Northumberland came in first place with an overall score of 7.85 out of 10, and Warwickshire came second with 7.43 out of 10. Nearby Suffolk was also included in the top 10, scoring 6.23 out of 10. Nick Paulson, Product and Category Manager at Outdoor Toys, said, "Planning a family holiday doesn't have to mean long-haul flights and complicated itineraries. What really matters is time spent together, outdoors, exploring, learning and laughing."
Plans for a new therapy room in a Norfolk village have been scrapped despite a wave of support from neighbours. The proposal had been submitted to North Norfolk District Council to convert a redundant barn on the border of East Ruston and Haysborough Common into the therapy room last October. It was set to offer services such as counselling, holistic therapy, massage or wellness coaching by a qualified practitioner on an appointment-only basis at the site off Haysborough Road. Many in the area were supportive of the scheme, with one describing it as a valuable service for those in the area. The proposal included transforming the former stables and pigsties into two therapy and treatment rooms, a waiting area, a toilet, and a kitchenette. A planning document had said, "This application proposes a sensitive and sustainable conversion of a redundant barn to provide a valuable local therapy service, supporting both rural economic activity and community well-being. One person felt the service would be of great benefit to everyone, particularly those who are more elderly and unable to travel easily to Great Yarmouth or Norwich. Another agreed and said, 'I fully support this application for a new local therapy room. As an elderly person, having things local, of whatever nature, is important to me, as I am sure it is to others who are not able to travel long distances into the city for treatment. Any increase in local health provision is to be welcomed.' However, there was one objector to the bid who raised concerns about the access to the business and described it as totally unsuitable. It is unclear as to why the applicants, Mr. and Mrs. Thirst, withdrew the application."
A volunteer has reached a new milestone in his RNLI career after completing advanced training. Justin Kerr, a member of Cromer RNLI, has successfully finished Tier 1 and Tier 2 crew training on both the inshore and all-weather lifeboats. Mr. Kerr first joined the station as shore crew in May 2022 and began crew training in April 2025. He said, "I joined the RNLI because I wanted to be part of something bigger than myself. Living near the coast I've always been aware of how quickly conditions can change and how vital it is to have skilled, committed people ready to respond at a moment's notice. I'm motivated by the opportunity to make a real difference in my community, whether that's assisting directly in rescues or supporting the wider efforts that keep people safe. Mr. Kerr's training covers casualty care and hands-on experience aboard both lifeboat types. He is nearing pass out as an inshore lifeboat mechanic, which will qualify him to help keep the lifeboat in operational condition. He continues to support launch operations in all weather as part of the shore crew team.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of The Mardler, with readings from the North Norfolk News. If you have any comments or queries, you can contact our listener liaison officer, Imogen Waterson, on 01263 587 610.
Perhaps we should just mention that if you have a smartphone, tablet or computer, or know someone who has, you can listen to this and other editions online at mardler.org.uk. You can also use an Alexa smart speaker, a variety of smartphone apps, or even a telephone call to listen. Find out the details on our website, mardler.org.uk.
We rely on receiving your returned memory sticks and pouches so that we can continue to send you new editions each week. So please remember to return the pouch and memory stick promptly, making sure to reverse the address label first.
The sound engineer today was David Mitchell. Editing and producing this issue was Rick Wackhorn.
Our colleagues in the copying and dispatch room join us in wishing you the best of health, and we look forward to joining you again in a week's time. But for now, it's
cheerio!